You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay first aired on July 8, 1988.
The latest issue of the Conservationist magazine has a review of a book on the red fox, an animal whose size is dwarfed by his reputation. The fox is actually a small animal, weighing only from 10 to 15 pounds, about 3 feet in length, including that spectacular tail, and about 15 inches in height at the shoulders. My first awareness of the fox may have been like yours, through reading Aesop's fables, Thornton Burgess' Mother West Wind stories, or perhaps Uncle Remus. Each one paints a slightly different picture of the fox, sly, devious, rapacious, but gullible, and no match for the likes of Br'er Rabbit. That kind of summarizes the unreal imagery the fox conjures up in most minds. Many sportsmen credit the fox single-handedly with the decline of the pheasant and the cyclic fluctuations of the rabbit, not to mention the grouse. They paint a black picture of the fox's environmental citizenship. The fox is really not worthy of its reputation. In the first place, its environmental citizenship is much better than we will allow. It does its job, partly predator, partly gleaner, partly scavenger. The fox is also an exemplary mate, carrying food for its spouse and helping with the rearing of the young. It is during this period of family responsibility when the fox often runs into trouble with a farmer over depredations at the hen house. I can't remember the first time I saw a red fox in the wild, probably in winter, when its rich red coat silhouetted against a white snowbank is every bit as spectacular as a male cardinal in a snow-covered spruce tree. The fox is a dainty animal with graceful lines and great speed of foot. Its fine features and its alertness project an impression of intelligence. Fox hunters are full of great tales about the uncanny skills of the fox at confounding the hounds. My own impressions are somewhat different. For one thing, the fox seems to have an inordinate amount of curiosity and perhaps an unhealthy disdain for people. I remember a number of years ago when I was doing some consultant work for Nassau County BOCES at Comset Park on the north shore of Long Island. I encountered red foxes everywhere on those acres, denning in culverts, hunting in weedy pastures, even foraging for crayfish or minnows in a small stream. Comset was the estate of publisher Marshall Fields III, unceremoniously abandoned by his widow when she sold it to the state. So there was much incidental history strewn about in some of its amazing buildings. I was standing one morning in the workroom of the greenhouse complex, thumbing through a calendar in which planting and grounds care schedules were entered, when I happened to look up, and there, not 10 feet away, standing in a planter that brought him just about eye level, was a beautiful big red fox watching me attentively. There was a glass panel door between us, but that did little to lessen my reaction. I was startled and amazed. As I looked up, the fox, its curiosity satisfied, turned and ambled away, leaping from planter to planter and exiting the greenhouse through an open door at the far end. I suspected a den, perhaps secreted under one of the piles of debris, but a careful search turned up none of the typical signs of a den. Perhaps the fox's interest in the greenhouse was in mice or chipmunks. The Comset foxes, despite their boldness and curiosity, gave every evidence of excellent health. Still, such concentrations do raise the specter of rabies to anyone my age who remembers the great rabies scare in central New York immediately following World War II. I remember, as a student at Cornell, when Tompkins County cows died of rabies and parents were afraid to allow their children to wander in the fields and in the woodlands for fear of encountering rabid foxes. Both Rice Creek and Baltimore Woods today support healthy fox populations, as does the rest of New York State, again providing evidence of the fox's remarkable adjustment to men. In both places, the foxes seem to have an exquisite awareness of the human schedules, so the chances of surprising one near the buildings is greatest at times when people are not usually around. A homely example of this was provided at Rice Creek several years ago. The day when we switched from daylight savings to standard time left us in the building an hour later than usual. At just about 10 minutes after 4 Eastern Standard Time, that's 5:10 daylight saving time, a beautiful adult red fox ambled across the lawn and proceeded to hunt the shoreline of the pond, pausing a moment to watch a small group of widgeon feeding just offshore. It then continued along the shoreline, passing from sight behind a clump of alders. Within a few minutes, it returned again, still foraging. Suddenly, it leaped into the shoreline sedges, emerging with a mouse. It proceeded to play with the mouse for some time before dispatching it. Don Cox and I watched this whole episode from the gallery window, aware that we were watching probably a habitual behavior for the fox, whose sense of timing made no allowance for such complications as daylight and standard time. Well, I started out to tell you something about the biology and environmental citizenship of the fox, and ended up talking mostly of its impact on me. That's typical of this animal, whose reputation always exceeds his actions. Well, that's all I have for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week, and keep it natural.